Welcome to Signs of the Times, a look at recent world events from around our kitchen table.
Welcome back to another Signs of the Times podcast, where this week we'll be talking about Armageddon, end of the world, fundamentalist Christianity, fundamentalist Islam, the war on terror, and Zionism, to name but a few things, and how all of these play into the current political and social state of the world, and where it might all be leading us. One of the issues that we've been at pains to try and understand in terms of the actions of the Bush administration in invading Iraq and Afghanistan, and now it seems planning to continue the war on into the greater Middle East, is why so many Americans, or as it seems, so many Americans don't really seem to be that bothered by the obviously insane actions of their government, and why this could be, why what is behind it. I mean, do many Americans support these actions of their government, and if so, why? In thinking about this issue, one thing that came to our attention was the idea of fundamentalist religion, specifically in the US, fundamentalist Christianity, and how that might play into this kind of apparent apathy, or even, dare we say, support among so many members of the American population for these wars of aggression and in the Middle East. So the first thing we need to look at, really, I suppose, is the idea of fundamentalism itself and what exactly it is, specifically in America, again, fundamentalist Christianity.
And I think it's important to kind of clarify exactly what the difference between a fundamentalist Christian and, for example, an evangelical Christian is. So along those lines, we'll start with a very nice little definition that you can find on Wikipedia. And they write that fundamentalist Christianity, or Christian fundamentalism, refers in general to a movement that arose mainly within American Protestantism in the late 19th and early 20th centuries by conservative evangelical Christians who, reacting to modernism, decided that they would come up with a set of fundamental beliefs. And these fundamental beliefs were the inerrancy of the Bible, the virgin birth of Christ, the doctrine of substitutionary atonement, the bodily resurrection of Jesus, and the authenticity of his miracles. And the general perception of the term today that we have of the word fundamentalism was sort of colored by a couple of events. The first time that fundamentalism was used in a negative sense for all Christian groups was by the Lutheran theologian Martin E. Marty in his five-volume Fundamentalism Project. And the second, and perhaps more important, or at least more interesting to us in our discussion, is that during the episode where there were Americans held hostage in Lebanon, there were certain members of the press that started referring to the Islamic Hezbollah captors as, quote, Islamic fundamentalists, unquote, which is, of course, a term that we're very familiar with today because everybody who is basically being demonized as the terrorists is an Islamic fundamentalist. And so, consequently, this idea of, you know, fundamentalist, specifically Islamic fundamentalist, has come to be associated with, you know, it has a negative connotation now. But interestingly enough, even though we have, you know, approximately, it's roughly 30% of the population of the U.S. are fundamentalist Christians. And so we can see that in the U.S. anyway, the fundamentalist Christian population is not considered to be, well, at least by Americans, to be a terrorist group, whereas Islamic fundamentalists, well, everybody knows they're the terrorists, right? And to understand a little bit better about where Christian fundamentalists are coming from, there's a book by Dale A. Robbins called What People Ask About the Church. And in a little excerpt, he writes that from the Christian perspective, fundamentalist has traditionally referred to any follower of Christ who believes that the Bible is the inspired word of God and who believes in its literal interpretation and fundamental teachings. Now, of course, this kind of brings up an interesting point about not just Christianity and not just Islam, but basically all organized religions. Last week on our podcast, we talked about mind control and propaganda in the sense of not talking about green bombing, which is a means of brainwashing, which we discussed in a previous podcast, but rather the sort of everyday propaganda and mind programming that we're exposed to, for example, when you watch television and you're watching advertisements, or when you go to a store, or the type of propaganda that, for example, the Bush administration uses to promote itself and its policies. And so we see that religions, in a sense, are basically another means of mind programming. You know, whether you have, you know, regardless of whether it was, you know, Jesus who performed miracles and created loaves of bread and fish, or whether it's the, you know, a prophet, or whether it's the Quran or the Torah or the Bible or whatever, you have all these religions, and they are all essentially not able to be proven historically. Certainly some events are. In her article, Who Wrote the Bible, Laura Nyadjic asks some very interesting questions about the Christian Bible, and points out that basically, you know, I mean, the Bible was written by, it appears, a huge number of different people. It was modified. Things were thrown out when they, you know, for political reasons, even, as it was written and rewritten, and there's no real historical or objective reality to what is said in the Bible, for example. And the same is true of the Quran and the Torah and all these, I mean, basically all the religions.
Yes, you're essentially saying that these religions are all man-made. And in a sense, in a very real sense, religion is the mind programming par excellence, in that it's not just about mind programming, subtle mind programming, in terms of offering people a product that they don't need, or convincing them that a government policy is the right policy. But it obviously involves the whole idea of heaven and saviorship, being absolved of our sins, etc., etc., and what happens to us after we die, obviously.
And I mean, look at, you know, in terms of fundamentalist Christians have a literal interpretation of the Bible. Well, look what this has wrought, you know, throughout human history. I mean, we've had religion, wars that have been fought over religion. You've had the Inquisitions, where, I mean, there's, when we say that, you know, this is mind programming, and that fundamentalist Christianity is being used for something other than good, it's not like there isn't a precedence for this. I mean, this is something that has happened before, and it's happening again. One of the other interesting things about the U.S. is, you know, you have all these televangelists who are making obscene amounts of money, and everybody, I mean, they fill entire stadiums full of people. I mean, you know, tens of thousands of people, and they're all touched by God, and, you know, all this stuff happens. And of course, this is kind of like a sort of an accepted part of American culture, and many people don't really think anything of it. Well, if you go to other countries in Europe, for example, and you show someone, you know, you fire up the satellite dish or something and say, check out the God channel, or, you know, one of these, you know, Bible TV or one of these channels, and you show it to them, they go, oh my God, what is this? You know, this is like, it's something that's like so totally foreign that how could there be all these people who are, I mean, they instantly look at it and go, it's a joke. Of course, these are, I guess, technically evangelists. So to highlight the difference between evangelists and fundamentalists, to further clarify our more or less the focus of our discussion, on the November 3rd, 2003 Science page, we had an article from The Guardian entitled, So George, How Do You Feel About Your Mom and Dad? And one of the interesting quotes from this article is, most fundamentalist Christians have authoritarian personalities. Two core beliefs separate fundamentalists from mere evangelists, or basically the mainstream Presbyterians among whom Bush first learned religion every Sunday with his parents. The first is something that we've already mentioned, that fundamentalists take the Bible absolutely literally as the Word of God, and believe that human history will come to an end in the near future, preceded by a terrible apocalyptic battle on Earth between the forces of good and evil, where only the righteous shall survive. And so the author continues, and he talks about how Bush talks about the axis of evil, and that for Bush, as a fundamentalist Christian, talking about the axis of evil is not just something that, you know, it's just some evil countries. It actually is, you know, these countries are the personification of evil and the devil and Satan himself in the true biblical sense.
Well, it's interesting that you talk about about the history of organized religion and what it has wrought on the planet. I mean, it could reasonably be stated that the defining aspect of organized religion has been war and death, and people fighting wars of religion. And certainly, while it may not seem very obvious to most people today, that is still the case today, in that, as we shall see, the one of the underlying themes of the current war on terror is, at least to a large extent, religion. And in fact, it reminds us of the of a certain General Boykin, who was a major party in the Bush administration's organization of the war on terror, where in 2003 he was traveling around various churches around America and giving talks to the faithful on just what the upcoming war, or the war that was just in progress at that stage, what it was all about. General Boykin, and we assume that this was with the sanction and support of the White House, stood up in front of a group of people in one of these churches and asked the question, "Why is this man in the White House?" referring to George Bush. He answered the question, "He's in the White House because God put him there for a time such as this." In January, Boykin told Baptists in Florida about a victory over a Muslim warlord in Somalia who had boasted that Allah would protect him from American capture. General Boykin stated, "I knew my God was bigger than his. I knew that my God was a real God, and he was an idol." Boykin also emerged from the conflict with a photograph of the Somalian capital, Mogadishu, bearing a strange dark mark. He had said that this showed the principalities of darkness, a demonic presence in that city that God revealed to him as the enemy. On the Middle East, General Boykin told an Oregon church in June 2003 that America could not ignore its Judeo-Christian roots. "Our religion came from Judaism, and therefore Islamic radicals will hate us forever." In the same month, Boykin told an Oklahoma congregation that Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein were not the enemy, surprisingly. He stated, "Our enemy is a spiritual enemy, because we are a nation of believers. Our enemy's name is Satan." Now, General Boykin is not alone in presenting the entire war on terror in these biblical terms. A very well-known fundamentalist Christian preacher, perhaps the preeminent preacher in the US, Jerry Falwell, stated in response to the question, "Who will the Antichrist be?" He said, "Of course he will be Jewish." And we don't even have to, I mean, we're not just talking about the present day. Former President Jimmy Carter also opined that the creation of Israel in 1948 meant a return at last to the biblical land from which the Jews were driven so many hundreds of years ago. The establishment of the nation of Israel is the fulfillment of biblical prophecy and the very essence of its fulfillment. So these are just a few of the comments that make it very clear that the idea of a biblical war, and indeed of the idea of the end times or the wars of Armageddon, is something that has that runs through American politics in a very significant way, and has done for many years. And at the minute, not least our favorite president, George Bush, is right there with them, because in just last year, in a three-part miniseries on the BBC, we were first notified of George Bush's understanding or beliefs about the war in Iraq when he was in, he had been on a trip to Palestine, and he told the Palestinian president at the time, and the president of the Palestinian Authority and the Palestinian foreign minister, he told them, "I'm driven with a mission from God." He said, "God would tell me, George, go and fight those terrorists in Afghanistan. And I did. And then God would tell me, George, go and end the tyranny in Iraq. And I did." So this really brings us to the heart of our discussion here today as to what exactly, or what part exactly, the whole religious fundamentalism plays in what's going on the planet at the minute, particularly obviously in terms of the Iraq invasion. And as Scott has mentioned before, as we all know, the official reason for the war in Iraq and the invasion of Afghanistan that preceded it was that Islamic fundamentalists obviously had attacked, allegedly, America on 9/11, and that they were determined to spread their Islamic fundamentalist faith around the world. But is that the case?
And just one other little point to support what Joe was saying before we delve into the topic of the war on terror a little more deeply as it relates to the whole religion aspect, lest we think that, well, you know, everything would be fine if we just got Bush and all his pals, if we just, you know, throw them out of the White House, you know, everything's going to be okay. Well, as Joe mentioned, Jimmy Carter seems to share the sort of fundy viewpoint, and
Ronald Reagan as well.
Ronald Reagan, and also our good friend Al Gore is also a fundamentalist Christian. So while 30% of the population approximately might be fundamentalist Christians in the United States, it seems that a very large number of U.S. leaders, especially in the military, a disproportionate number of them in relation to the population are fundamentalist Christians. And so then this brings us again back to the war on terror, where we have, of course, Joe mentioned the 9/11 attacks, and of course the rationale given for the invasion of Iraq has changed over time, and it has become, well, you know, it's all about, well, eventually it became, you know, we were going to bring freedom and democracy to the Iraqis. And so what we come down to, knowing what we know and what we've discussed previously about how it appears that the 9/11 operation was a false flag operation involving Mossad and Israel, and as we can see quite clearly from the U.S. support of Israel, which is pretty much obscene in terms of, you know, I mean, you can look at a list of the U.N. resolutions that the U.N. has vetoed when anyone tried to do anything about Israel. The U.S. was always there to shoot down anything that was going to cause problems for Israel. And so, of course, you have these fundamentalist Christians who are in power and have been in power for some time in the U.S., and of course they're supporting Israel because, you know, well, the question really is, are they supporting, you know, Jews in general, or are they supporting the Zionists? And of course there's a huge difference between Jews and Zionists, and in fact there are quite a few Jews who are absolutely appalled at what the Zionists are doing, and they claim that the Zionists, you know, Ariel Sharon, for example, are not Jews by any stretch of the imagination. So you sort of have this, you know, there are fundamentalist Christians who are running the U.S., and then you have the normal Christians, and then you have Jews in Israel and elsewhere who are basically under the control of the Zionist cabal, and...
Well, the question then is, who are the true believers? Who are the real, you know, you have Jewish people who follow the Jewish faith, but to a large extent, the extreme nature of that faith is being shoved down their throats by these people who claim to be representing them, who are also known as Zionists. And it kind of brings up an interesting point, because we've already talked about the idea of religion being essentially mind control. So the question then is Bush and are these Zionists all being mind controlled as well? Or do they actually, is there any truth? We've already said that in terms of the historical accuracy of organized religion and what it claims happened and is going to happen is not true from a historical point of view. But do people like Bush and Sharon and these other Zionists, do they actually believe this, or are they using it? Do they understand that it's simply a form of mind control, and are they using it to further some other goal, some other political goal? And the interesting thing is that in an almost paradoxical sort of way, while the prophecies, as we've been saying, that are contained within the organized religions they're very suspect based on the fact that the religions that underpin them are not based on historical fact. But it seems that the way that the world is going in terms of the war and the wars that the Americans and the Israelis are waging at the minute, they seem to dovetail quite nicely with biblical prophecy, almost as if this biblical prophecy is being used as a cover to fulfill this prophecy. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy, as it were, although we're seriously doubtful as to whether there'll be any return of Jesus or not, but that'll be the least of our worries if any of the stuff that is meant to come before that actually happens. And the problem that we're trying to highlight here is that a lot of those prophecies are going to come to pass in a way, but certainly it won't have any kind of supernatural or spiritual aspect to it. It'll be more to do with just endless war and bloodshed and possibly, ultimately, the destruction of large parts of the world.
And due to the manipulations and lies of the people who are in power. And that brings up another point, which is that if you read Laura Knight Jagic's new book, 9/11, The Ultimate Truth, you will discover some interesting new data that sheds some new light on the nature of the false flag operation that occurred.
So in an attempt to answer our initial question as to why there seems to be this silence or tacit support from at least a significant portion of the US population for this crazy, brutal war in the Middle East that is just getting started, we have to understand that for those fundamentalist Christians in America, the war in Iraq was extremely pleasing and even exciting to these people, because they fervently believed that this was the beginning, this is a sign of the beginning of the fulfillment of biblical prophecy, because according to the fundamentalist Christians, there has to be, and they obviously they base their belief on biblical prophecy, there has to be a war in the Middle East for Jesus to return, specifically the emergence of the Antichrist, who must precede the arrival of Jesus. And as you just mentioned, Jerry Falwell has told us that the Antichrist is going to be Jewish. Also, as part of this return of Jesus, the temple in Jerusalem, the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, must be rebuilt for a third time. And obviously, for that to happen, the temple must be the temple, which is in its second incarnation at the minute, must be destroyed. And obviously, for it to be destroyed, there must be some kind of a major conflagration in that area. Obviously, it includes the tribulation. This end times prophecy, according to the fundamentalist Christians, is supposed to include war, earthquakes, locusts, etc., etc. And all of this is hoped for by these people as a necessary preliminary to establishing God's kingdom on earth. The fundamentalist Christian theory also demands that Jews will convert to Christianity so that they can then become witnesses or converters of the Gentiles. The problem with this, and this is a problem with the current friendship between Israel and the US in terms of the fundamentalists who are following this fundamentalist religious belief, is that from the Jewish point of view, the Jewish Messiah, and we should note that the Jews do not, these Jews who ascribe to the fundamentalist beliefs, do not believe that the Messiah has returned. They don't believe that Jesus was the Messiah, and they're still expecting him to return. And when he returns, what will happen as a result is that he will end the Jews' exile and re-establish David's kingdom in the capital, which is Jerusalem. Notably, the Messiah, the Jewish Messiah, will defeat the Gentile nations, according to Jewish prophecy, end times prophecy. And obviously, Gentile nations is anybody who is not Jewish. After which, the Jews in exile will return and rule in an age of spiritual harmony. So, as we've been mentioning, all of this tends to dovetail quite nicely with how things have actually happened, or how events have progressed since, specifically since 9/11. And we should it brings up an interesting point in terms of our thesis that Israel was behind 9/11 and is essentially the motivating force behind the entire war on terror. And if we look at the result of the war on terror and what has happened since 9/11, I mean, America has fallen a long way and is in a very precarious situation at the minute. And this this brings up it certainly makes us think twice about the idea of the Jewish biblical prophecy of the Messiah defeating the Gentile nations. Obviously, one of the major Gentile nation in the world at the minute is the US, with its many millions of fundamentalist Christians. So there's this contradiction and this opposition between the Jewish, or more specifically the Zionist agenda, and the fundamentalist Christian agenda, which for the time being, they both are happy to work together. But ultimately, as the saying goes, there can be only one. And we wonder just how this is going to pan out, and in terms of 9/11 and the involvement, as we say, of Israel along with the Bush administration, and what actually happened as part of that 9/11 false flag operation, and why America seems to be at the minute serving to the letter, serving Israel's agenda in the Middle East, is a very, very interesting question.
It is rather interesting, because you have the fundamentalist Christians in America who are basically pushing to support Israel because they want the apocalypse to come, and then you have the Jews under the control of the Zionists who think that their version of the end of the world is going to come to pass. And in a sense, you have two sides who are basically planning on double-crossing the other. And the idea of a double-cross is particularly relevant to the topic of 9/11. In Laura Knight Yadgick's new book, 9/11, The Ultimate Truth, she reveals some new information regarding the double-cross that took place on 9/11. And, well, let's just say it's something that you don't want to miss. And regarding 9/11, The Ultimate Truth, in next week's podcast, we should probably mention that we will be interviewing author Laura Knight Yadgick, and we'll be discussing the topic of 9/11, and perhaps she may give a few hints.
So, as we've mentioned, both the biblical, or the end times prophecies from both Judaism, or fundamentalist Judaism and fundamentalist Christianity, center on Israel, specifically Jerusalem, and the need for some kind of major war in that specific area. But one of the most striking things of all is that coincidentally, Islam also adopts the same setting, Jerusalem, for its kind of apocalyptic end times prophecy. At the end of time, the Muslim tradition say that Islam's central shrine in Mecca, complete with the stone, will have to come to Jerusalem for their prophecy to be fulfilled. So it just brings us back to the point, the strange, the bizarre, and almost supernatural way in which these three major religions are all, at the minute, are all have been manipulated to be at each other's throats, and have been used as a justification for the current war that is, as we say, is only just getting started and is set to escalate in a serious way. And while those end times prophecies are based on, from a historical point of view, a fictitious religious basis, at the same time, it seems to be coming to pass, as it were, which I suppose, if we pursue that angle far enough, we'd have to get into the long history of these religions and the way that they've evolved over the many hundreds of years, which would lead us into an idea of some kind of a force, or some kind of agents working behind the scenes, bizarrely as it sounds, over many, many hundreds of years, to set up these religions and to set up humanity, essentially, to fulfill this prophecy that was essentially made up, but that is now coming to pass.
And this idea of some people or things that have the capability to influence history over a vast period of time, again, that might sound crazy, but in our interview, our last interview with Laura Knight Yadgick, she was talking about how when looking at all the data, it's you look at this and there's just really no way that a group of human beings over a period of hundreds, even thousands of years, could have orchestrated all of this. And so you are essentially rationally and logically forced to hypothesize that there is something, basically that man is not at the top of the food chain. Interestingly enough, it is only when you take into account this idea that things start to fall into place.
So the fact about it is that all of this was started. The ball got rolling as a result of 9/11, and that, as I'm sure we're all aware, that's the defining event of this period in our history, really, because everything that is happening now has happened as a result of that event. That's not to say that that event was not many years in the making and many years in the planning, but certainly it set the scene for what is happening at the minute and what is to come. And as Scott mentioned, we'll be getting into 9/11 and the movers and shakers behind 9/11 and what their ultimate secret was, and what their ultimate goal is. We'll be getting into that question in a little bit more depth with Laura Nijacek next week, and of course we'll be taking it to its final and more than likely bloody denouement.
And before we go, we would also like to mention that Laura will be interviewed on Coast to Coast with George Noory this weekend. And that promises to be a rather interesting interview. So that's it for this week. And as always, if you'd like to read more about the topics we discussed today, you can visit our site at www.signs-of-the-times.org. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.